At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
What's happening, y'all? This is Todd Wilson with another episode of Elevate Your Game. Today, we have father, longtime coach in the game from college, in USA basketball camps. I don't know. It's a lot. He's just a coach. He's a career coach. Am I missing anything?
Assistant principal.
He's now the campus coordinator of Core Prep Academy in St. Monica.
Got it.
The head basketball school. Our head coach of West Ranch High School in Santa Clarita, California. Mr. Brian Bartley.
Thank you, man. My God.
Yes, sir.
I appreciate it. Thank you for allowing me to come in.
No, man. We are blessed to have you here today, man. We love to start this show off with the Wall of Hoop movies. Favorite hoop movie of all time and why?
Coach Carter. I like Coach Carter because of the storyline, what he was doing for the young men, and it's based on a true story. So it was great for me. It's motivation as a coach, motivation for players, but it just showed that a coach can also be a great coach but a factor in a school building and letting kids know how important academics are.
100%. Locking kids in the gym, on the basketball court, not playing is wild, but very appreciated. Did you name your plays after women as well?
No, I did not.
Okay, good.
I didn't do that. I would have been in a superintendent office. So, no.
Man, all right. So when did you fall in love with basketball?
I think my first journey was as a elementary kid. It's funny, in New York, everyone plays, playground, watching. But in New York City, it's a little different because if you can't play, you can't come out there. So once you lose, you might as well go home and make a sandwich, get some Kool-Aid, because that long line to get back on the court, it was tough. So I fell in love in elementary, and Mr. Brown, Mr. Shannon, I was part of this Cub Scout group, and they wanted to create their own team. And that was my first introduction of like real organized play. And then from there, I just took off.
How old were you exactly?
I think maybe 11 or 12. I was kind of tall for my age, so everybody wanted to have me center. But the great thing about New York, everybody wants to dribble, so.
You learn how to handle
that. There you go. Yeah, even as a big man, got to put it on.
You still got a little handle, too. I see you up there.
I got a little
something. People be sleeping. Like,
hey, yeah, they don't know. They got a little something. Man, tell you.
That's awesome. So it was a community team. So do you guys play like at the rec center, or was it like a AAU team for that time, or what was it exactly?
It was more rec. It was rec playing at different schools on Saturday morning games. And, you know, from there it took off, and then I went into AAU and had the blessing to play for Riverside Church.
Okay, so Riverside, is that a
AAU program, one of the biggest AAU programs in New York City. Riverside and the Gauchos were the two biggest programs in
the
city.
Okay, right. Okay. And then so your coaches, so you mentioned your coaches, how big were they in your development early on as far as like actually learning to play the game?
I think I was blessed to be in a position to go to a very prestigious school, play for a really great coach named Gene Doris, who ended up being the athletic director for Fairfield University. And our team was extremely good. Our team is still, the school is still good to this day. You know, Boogie Flan just came out of there, and the point guard of North Carolina, R.J. Davis, played there, and Griffin, who played at Duke. Those are some of the guys now. But I played with Timmy O'Toole, who's associated at Pitt. Fred Quarterbaum is at Kansas, Maciello, who's helping over at St. John's. And so our coach did a really good job of teaching us the game from a perspective of how to play. So we learned from him the rules of just passing and moving and cutting, not just putting the ball up and dribbling 16 times. So real discipline. It was the first time. I'm a family of 10, the only one who ever went to private school. And all of a sudden, I went from a public high school with Alexander Hamilton. Next thing you know, I was in this private school, all-boys school called Stepanak, my ninth grade year. And
Because you were good at basketball?
Yeah, it did. It honestly, it changed my trajectory for me, but it also changed the trajectory for my kids.
Yeah.
It allowed me to see life from a different perspective. And then also, I started not only understanding the game, but understand the educational part of how important athletics and academics were entwined.
So it was like a real Finding Forrester moment for you, huh?
There you go. Finding Forrester was it. That's why I love that movie. That's my second best movie, just to let you know. Yeah. Right? My second best.
And so what was that experience like seeing the public school in New York, which was probably heavily different from the private school situation, especially then? And was there like, you know, race, like being in a private school as a black kid then? Yeah. and what types of things did you face, even within your family, being the only one going to a private school? You know, how did that impact just your
life? It was tough because I didn't, you know, of course, in the neighborhood, everyone thought it was like I was a traitor because I left to play in a public school, and high school was really good. But, and then having a family of 10 and playing, there were some things I had to learn. And the biggest growth was the simple fact that, you know, my mother was Panamanian, my father was Jamaican. They didn't know about sports too much. And, you know, nobody really came to the games. So I was there by myself. And then I was like the only black on the team at the time.
Yeah.
So it was tough, new culture, trying to figure out, you know, a lot of things that I had to figure out on my own of identity, who I really am. Like, you know, what am I here for? Like, whatever. And I kind of learned through the process of being around different people of what sports and what basketball can open up avenues for you that if you was a regular student, I'd probably be back at a public school.
Yeah.
So, you know, New York City was good. It was big, and the Catholic school lead was tough. It was the biggest thing around. You know, you're talking about Chris Mullin at the time, and Kenny Smith was over at Malloy, James Majors, and Mark Jackson was Bishop Lachlan. The lead was at one of the peaks of New York City time. So everyone who was really good was in the Catholic lead. And I just so happened to be in a place that there weren't a lot of black guys on the team, you know, but Fred came up behind me as another brother. And it was kind of difficult at some times, but I played 4 years of varsity. I was on the varsity as a freshman, but guys like Larry Blucher went to UConn, took me in, and Timmy O'Toole, I stayed at his home a few times. And so those things allowed me to be able to kind of transition better because they opened their homes to me. So that was cool.
Awesome. So you had a community inside your community to help.
It was a little bit something because, you know, like I said, it was challenging, but at the same time, there was some jealousy because of the fact that I was there and why. But guys like that, I've learned from an early age that the basketball court was my sanctuary. It was where I could get everything out. You know, as a child dealing with so many issues at home too, and parents that are not from America. And it's not like now, you know, people like Jamaican music, Jamaican food, people like African music, people really didn't, they didn't really, I was being teased because I was not from there. You know, I was getting teased in my own neighborhood with my own people because I was Jamaican. So,
teased?
Yeah, you know, what they call tease, but you know how this, man, you know, they was picking on me, I guess you say, you know, nowadays if they call it bullying, you know, so, but I used it, I twisted it. It was my way of getting on the court, taking out everything I felt. And so again, it was good for me. And it's kind of similar for me as a coach now too. So it just kind of happened, it was good.
That's good. And so working through high school, what was your playing experience like on the court? You said you played 4 years of varsity, playing in this highly competitive league. You know, what were the peaks and the valleys of that experience through high school?
I didn't become what I thought I was going to become. In my mind, I thought I was going to, first of all, when I started as a freshman and a sophomore playing on the varsity, I didn't know how good I was. I was still trying to figure out. I just loved playing. And, you know, it was a guy named Ed Sands. He was Jewish, and Mr. Two, who saw me the first time, and Ed asked me what college I was going to. I was like, I'm going to high school. He's like, what? And then he introduced me going to Stepanak. And I thought in my mind, I didn't know what this whole situation was, but the local school at Hamilton didn't want me to leave. And the coach came and talked to my mom, and my mom was like, yo, hold up now. You never really even came to the building before. You didn't really, you know, come inside the home before. But my mother thought it was important for me to get to a place where the environment was conducive for me to be successful. And so she stuck with that, being a disciplinarian coming from Panama. So I decided to do it, and it was cool at first. And then later on, I started to find out how good I really was. And I didn't know how good I was until this camp that started, Nike started this new camp called Athletes for Better Education. And it was the top 150 kids, and I was invited, and every kid around the country was there, and they brought us to Princeton University. And that's when I was like, all right, I got a chance to really play.
What year was this?
No.
What year were you in, freshman, sophomore?
It was my junior, sophomore going to my junior.
Gotcha.
So okay. I was allowed to be around some of the best players in the
similar to a five, like the five-star camps, kind of similar?
Yeah, I did five-star too, but you know, Gene was a real follower of Jack Current at Malloy, and he didn't want us to go to five-star.
Gotcha.
He didn't support five-star. So I go to that camp, and now all the letters are coming in. I'm getting letters from everywhere. Mm. And I thought I was gonna be big, and it didn't turn out like that, not to go into my story about college, but I ended up playing D2 instead of transferring, but...
No, we got to talk about your college story. What are you talking about? So what happened? Yeah, what happened so between that, that junior year, going into your junior year, getting an opportunity, being a top player, and from your junior and senior year, what happened?
I didn't think I moved and progressed like I should have. I played at Riverside Church for Ernie Leutch, and then things were going well for me. Then I got into a little trouble, and my hands was broken up, and I had stitches in my hand going into my senior year.
You beat
year.
Somebody up?
No, I didn't. My hand went through one of them glass, and in New York, they got the little wires in the glass, and then all that skin and everything came off, and I had major stitches in my hand at the end of the season. But anyway, just it didn't go the way I planned it to go.
Yeah.
And I did have some emotional issues at the time because I didn't have the system around me. Parents didn't know anything, you know, and mother, father wasn't together. And, you know, it's a long, traumatic experience I went through during my senior year that kind of led to me to not get to where I needed to go. And in my mind, I thought I was going to be a pro and move my mom's and this dream of I'm going to get her out of the neighborhood and buy this big, beautiful house. It just didn't happen like that.
Yeah.
You know, and I think this is why I do what I do now.
Talking to the 16, 17-year-old Brian, what would you have told that kid now, knowing what you know, going through what you went through during that time?
Finding resources around me, I think society's better equipped with people with mental health issues that back then we didn't talk about it, we didn't discuss it. And so because I've had issues of dealing with certain things, I didn't know how, and I didn't have the resources of dealing with it. I didn't have the resources around me. So if I went back to talk to myself, just finding people around that I can trust, and it was tough being in a school. See, what happens to a place and a person like me that, hey, you go into a new environment, then you're the only black and you're the youngest on the team. There's a lot of hurdles over it.
Yeah.
And now it's different. But then what these kids don't know, someone always go ahead of you. So there's someone ahead of you that goes through some certain things that open up doors for other people. So when I look back at Steppin', I can see the number of African-American guys that are on the team and the number of guys that are doing well. It kind of hits me because they don't realize the sacrifice of one or two people before them. And that's when I look at it. Like, my name and stuff is not all over the walls and everything like they are, but there's a lot of things that I had to do and go through to open up doors for them that they can't see now. Mm-hmm. And that's how I feel. I just feel like one of those things where I didn't get the credit and value I deserve, but this is what allows me to be able to do the things I do to help these young kids now. So it's a little different.
Yeah,
absolutely. You feel me?
No, got to use our situation to help somebody else for sure.
Yeah, he told me to make my mess a message and you know, and that's what I thought I did. And so, you know, I knew that I had to flip it. And I was always a guy that can flip things upside down. So, you know, make your test a testimony, your mess a message. And that's what I did.
Awesome. So you end up at a Division II school, college?
Upstate College in East Orange, New Jersey. We were really good. What was great about it was I wasn't the only one. We had about 5 or 6 Division I transfers, which was awesome.
So did you start at Division I? At Division I school?
No, I started school, but I didn't start the season. I transferred right before the season started.
Okay.
I was at Upstate College from the get-go, from freshman year. And
okay.
I had all these schools that were interested in me, but I ended up at Upstate College. And it was a guy named Russ Thompson who, you know, told me this would be a great opportunity. And when I got there, I had guys who were walking me around, like Lou Vincent, who was at Townsend State and some other places, and from Portchester. So I had people that were already there that were Division I players that had already transferred in that was telling me to transition and teaching me how to go through it. And we had a great year, great career, and we was in NCAA tournament every year. So we did well. We did well. It was cool.
Okay. And then through college, how was your growth then, right? So you moved further away from home?
Yeah, I was in New Jersey, not too far away. I didn't want to go too far. I was a believer that I didn't know a lot of stuff geographically, and so I thought to be close to home as much as possible when I can get back and forth, which was cool. So that worked out for me. And then I didn't play my senior season. It was weird. I ended up being more of an advocate of doing different things. I started the Black Student Union on campus. I was a residence director. I ran this thing called a pub. It was like a little pub on campus. I ran that as a manager. I was doing all kinds of things. But also the thing, you know, I needed money.
Okay, so you know why? I was gonna say why. So hoop was a dream,
right,
and you got to a level where you're playing at a high level in college, right? You know, was there something that changed in your life during that senior year where it was like, you know what, there's other things in life, or is it because you had to provide for yourself?
I had to provide for myself. I had to figure it out, you know. I was real cool. All my guys were at Seton Hall, you know, Pookie Wigginton, Ricky Burton was over there, James Majors, Kaim Long, like that whole crew at Seton Hall was my crew. So, Andre McLeod was really close to me too, who ended up playing in the league, but Andre McLeod was, I was trying to express to him one day that, when you're at a school like that, they come to you about financial aid and so forth, and so I didn't get any Pell money, anything else like that. So I was expressing to him my hurdles.
Yeah.
And then that's when I started realizing, you know what, I got to do some other things. I got to leave this thing alone. This is a survival mode thing. And I just went to survival mode.
Wow.
And I just started doing it. I didn't even play my senior year.
Wow.
Yeah.
But you did some amazing things. You started Black Student Union.
Yeah, I started a Black Student
Union.
Yeah, yeah.
You did some other things, some leadership things that probably, you know, built you to what you are today.
Yeah, true.
Of course. During this journey from birth until college, where was your spiritual journey?
It was growing because of the Catholic, being in a Catholic school, I felt like I was starting to understand and learn more about God and those things. And I really didn't get really into it until I went to the South and worked for the Atlanta Hawks. When I got to the South, Atlanta Hawks, everything flipped for me.
Gotcha.
It really just, because I was on my own again and trying to find myself and my identity, and I just needed some help. And I remember breaking down on my knees and saying to myself, like, you know, if God really exists, then help me right now.
Mm.
You know, and that's when I started finding people and things, and then church was big, and you're in a Bible Belt.
Yeah.
When you're in a Bible Belt, it changes everything. You know, everybody goes to church on Sunday.
Right.
They might party on Saturday, but they go to church on Sunday. You know?
You're going to be in church.
You're going to be in church.
So I don't want to skip years here. So your senior year, you graduate, get your degree?
Yeah, of course. I graduated.
Yep. Awesome. What did you get your degree in?
Communication and minor in marketing.
Awesome. And then what was your transition from not playing to coaching? Did you try to go pro at any time in there?
Yeah,
what
I did. It's funny. So I started working with UPS, had this new program, Overnight Air,
I'm
trying to find FedEx.
Yourself with that.
You know what? Let me not tell you that because now, because y'all don't know how it is. And so, one of the jobs was trying to promote it. I needed to promote, and they hired me to promote it. And then I had an opportunity to go overseas. Tom Parada was... I played him in high school. I played with him in high school, and he was asking Fred to go overseas, and Fred recommended me, and I went with Tom to Portugal.
Okay.
And in a plane.
Oh, nice.
And then that my journey started playing again.
Oh, nice. So, okay, so you took your senior year off and still got to go play?
Yeah, I played professional.
And how long did you play?
Probably. I played 2 years in Portugal, and then my year coming back, I worked out with John Martin at Seton Hall. John Martin was just drafted to Cleveland Cavaliers. I spent my summer with him working out, where I met the Cavs, and then I tried out for the Hawks maybe a year later.
Nice.
And then after trying out for the Hawks called me. I thought I had a chance to make the team, but it was about work.
So you did something in there by the way you played that, or did you apply for a job, or how did that?
No, it was funny. It was funny. They were looking for representation of young guys who are former players and. They thought, man, the way I carry myself, the way I articulate and playing around with the guys and fake interviews and practice. And Darryl Armstrong was one of my guys, and Josh Oberheimer, we were really close. Darryl ended up making a team and playing for Orlando, and I ended up working. So I go to the Hawks and I start working. I worked for the Hawks for maybe 5-6 years, and it was cool. And then after the Hawks, the Atlanta Celtics were just starting out. AAU program called the Celtics, and I met Wallace Prather, and I was being assistant in that place called Clarkston High School in DeKalb County with Bobby Brewington, and Bobby was coaching with the Celtics, and he brought me over to the Celtics, and I started coaching, and Bobby was going through some things in his own personal life, so he couldn't finish the summer, and he just tossed the team to me.
The 17U team?
It was a 17 second team.
Oops.
And what was amazing was they gave me that opportunity and I flipped it and I won. And that's when the Vegas had the big time and we got out of the pool and it just flipped. And I think Wallace was really excited with the fact of how I coached him. And we ended up having like 2 or 3 guys on that second team, Division I. Right. So I think that was the opening of everything for me. And then I just started working with Wallace, and then I met Sonny, then I started doing ABCD camp, and my career started taking off.
Oh, wow. Right. So that was your first experience coaching, was with the Atlanta Celtics,
yes.
Second team.
Yes.
They just threw you in the fire.
Threw me in the fire.
You know? What were you doing with the Hawks for that 5-6 year period?
I was doing marketing. I was doing marketing with them and then play personnel stuff with, you know, guys showing up to different events.
Okay.
You know, like we may have the Panasonic room and a guy comes in and talks about before the game.
Yeah.
And it's sponsored by Sony. So I was doing that, and it was cool. I did that for like 4 or 5 years, and then I left there and then got with the Celtics, and I was with the Celtics for another 4 or 5 years, and I got my first head coaching job at Lamar Christian School as a high school coach.
Nice. Okay. I started the journey, and stepping in as a coach, where did you start? Like, what was the starting point as a coach? Like, I'm gonna just do, you know, what I was taught, or did you kind of already have your own rhythm and flow to things? I know you now, you're a very detailed coach. Builder, right?
Hey, listen, so, you don't want to know how I was back then.
I need to know where you came from.
Hey, listen, when I was with the Celtics, I was a yeller and screaming motivator. I didn't even really know X and O's that much. You know, I just knew how to motivate, use spacing, and just tell them to play hard. And I remember Wallace's wife's like, you can't just yell at him all day. Like, you have to, you know, and it's funny. What she said to me resonated with me, and I was like, okay. You know, because the biggest question for coaching, or for anyone who's coaching now, is would you play for yourself? You know, would I play for me? And when she said it, I stopped in the hotel room like, I don't know if I would play for me.
I'm gonna start asking coaches that question, you know? On this show.
Yeah, like, that's would you play for you? And I said, I wouldn't play for me the way I'm yelling. I wouldn't play for me, not like that. If I'm a yell with a purpose. So I went from there and learned a lot of X and O's from a guy named Don Dollar at Clarkson High School, and he was the best. Don Dollar's son ended up playing at UCLA.
Okay.
Right? You all should know who he is by when I say Dollar, because he was in Bob Ties, didn't he? So.
Yes.
And then he has another son named Chad that played at South Florida. But I learned so much from Don Dollar. That we were in Clarkson High School, DeKalb County. We would, I don't know if it's legal now, I can tell, but we locked the doors and chained them, and Don
was on some Joe Clark.
Yeah, we were.
The chains out the door. Yeah.
But he was like a father figure. He was good. You know, like, we were in a low-income neighborhood, and we taught. And he was big on teaching. He would go to the Final Four every year with him and his wife, and that's what led me into it. I met a guy named Brandon Johnson by doing camps. I used to do Georgia Tech camp all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, New York City point guards was always in there. So Kenny Anderson and I were close. Kenny Smith and I played together at Riverside. We were backcourt together. So, I mean, with that happening, I just started learning more. I used to go to camps, Duke camps, North Carolina. I used to go to all these camps. Because back then it was big on high school coaches working camps.
Yeah.
So I worked a bunch of camps and started learning and started going to video room. And I just grew from there. I just started being a sponge, man. Because I wanted to be the kind of coach that I wasn't as a player. The best. Great. Mm-hmm. Separate myself. And I was like, all right, I don't want a regular high school. I want to be an exceptional coach. Yeah. I want to do an exceptional job. And that's when I learned that good was the enemy of great. And I was like, I don't want to be good. I want to be great. I can be great in this. And when the question came up.
Okay. I have to ask, what does that sacrifice look like from being good and great?
It's a huge sacrifice. But it's also as small as a needle that can go through between two fingers, because it's all the little small things that people don't want to do. You know, it's getting up in the morning and thinking about your team and how you can address them and how you can give life skills or how you can find a button. There's a button in every kid. And I knew as a high school coach that no one hit my button because no one really asked what I was playing for. They didn't ask me my why. You see, that's why I'm so hard in practice, because when you're running and you're putting in exhilarating all this energy, you're going to get to a place where you're going to ask yourself, why am I out here? Because it's tough. But if you don't ever push them that hard, they'll never ask the question why they're out there. They'll never ask a question, you know, do I really want to do this? Like, this is a lot of work. Man, I'm going home tired and homework. And that's how I was as a kid. I'm going home on 3 buses, whatever, because it wasn't in my neighborhood. So I'm taking a bus here, and I got to take 3 or 4 buses. It's taking me an hour in New York to go from there to my house. So I have to ask myself why. It's snowing. That's the difference between California being on. It's snowing. I'm at the bus stop.
Oh, I'm out here for a reason.
Right.
I ain't doing that.
Yo, dude, for real. It's freezing. My hands are cold. I'm waiting for the next bus. I just got out of practice and just saw the bus go by. I'm like, dang, I gotta wait another 35 minutes. And I'm out here in the snow and the snow's coming down. Why am I out here? Why am I going to this school? Why am I doing this? Man. And then I'm gonna hit 2-3 buses and half these kids are gonna be in their house and I'm just going through the door. I gotta do some homework. And it's high academic school. So why am I really doing this? I can just go up the street. So those whys are important. But if a kid never hits it and you never challenge them, how would they ever know? There you go. So that's when you talk about good to great, that's the difference though. And it's a life thing. It's not just a basketball thing.
Right.
Because you take it on. And I mean, think about the success you've had. All the things that pushes you to do what you do started also on the court as a player. You didn't just jump into this.
Right.
You thought, you prayed, and you understand how to play. Because it's amazing. People don't realize you don't have to be religious to have faith. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. People understand you have faith every day. Faith in yourself, your ability, and all kinds of things. So it's there. But people haven't intertwined it to realize it yet. So that's all it's been.
I was waiting for you to get in your bag. Thank you.
Man, whatever, man.
I was waiting. Yo.
Tired of something else.
Been waiting for this. Okay, awesome. So your growth as a coach, Atlanta Celtics, you get into the ABCD camp. You said that's where your career really took a, you know, it excelled. What was different about that space and what changed?
Listen, greatness comes from habits. Getting up early, getting to dinner early, getting my team ready, whatever. So Sonny saw some things in me that most people, next thing you know, 2-3 years in ABC, I'm not coaching, I'm a commissioner. I'm overseeing seeing other people. And it's funny because people don't realize, again, that's that good to great. See, good is getting down to coach your team on time. Good is just going over to the gym and say, I got a bunch of guys. Great is like, I'm gonna give them something. Great is like, every kid comes to me with a candle and I'm gonna find a way to light that joint. You feel what I'm saying? Like great is like, you know,
don't
what?
Don't cry, Karina.
You know, I'm sorry. great is being able to give kids something inside of them that they're gonna take for the rest of their life. Like, you know what? 20 years ago, coach, listen, I was doing Paul George. I'm in a hotel in Phoenix. I'm coaching the 17s, but the 16 coach is what's my man name again?
Moose?
Not Moose, but he's with Moose.
Steve.
Mm-hmm. So Steve knocks on my door. He comes in. He says, yo, you're going to trip this out. You're going to trip out on this. I said, what? You are my coach at ABCD. I said, what? Steve's like, yeah, I got the pictures. You coached me at ABCD camp.
Wow.
You see, so it's full circle now. Mm. I'm upstairs. I'm coaching 17s. He's coaching 16s, but I used to be his coach. So it's amazing how that circle moves. The impact you have for someone else can be a major impact. I've learned one thing being in the South and coaching. What you may do for one person may impact him that may impact thousands.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like whoever coached Roy Williams, look at the impact. You know? Look at the impact that Coach K has on thousands of kids by one person putting in him like Bobby Knight. So the impact you're having at your school with one kid at core could change thousands of kids. That experience can change thousands of kids. And it may not even be basketball.
Yeah.
It could be a lawyer, whatever. I just went this summer to one of my kids graduate from Air Force. What kind of impact that? Well, I'm like, wow, Air Force, you know? Or having a kid like Trey Souter, who's a Navy SEAL. Or having other kids who've taken journeys in there. Or like Justin Miller, who is building wells in Africa, helping people with AIDS. You know, or Damian Nash that write children books. Or, you know, these are all the kids that played for me. So they don't have just an impact on the court. They have an impact on the world on different things. And that's the difference between good and great. You feel me?
Impact. We would end the show right here, but we got a lot more time. Okay.
I mean, he's a trip, man. I don't know what's
No, up. Man. That's amazing. All right. So you're coaching at the school in Atlanta, ABCD camp. What's the next move? What's the next? Give me here. We got 2 minutes, Drew. I want you to talk about your coaching journey before you moved to LA, which was 2 years ago. You got 2 minutes. Tell me everywhere you coached and a little piece of that.
So I went Atlanta Celtics. Mm-hmm. After Atlanta Celtics, I went to Landmark Christian, became a high school coach at Landmark. I run into I have two young men on the team. Boom, I coach Randolph Morris. We ended up playing the ESPN game against Dwight Howard on ESPN. Every general manager in the NBA was at the game. remember, Randolph was first round, Dwight was first round pick. Yeah. So I got two kids in same conference playing at Georgia Tech in front of 5,000 because we can't fit the game in no other place but Georgia Tech. Chris, another propel, changes. Now I'm at Auburn University as an assistant coach. I'm coaching at Auburn, doing well. Unfortunately, we lost our jobs. When Auburn was closed, when they dismissed the team, the AD, Jay Jacobs, asked me to come back to work for him. I worked back for him, went back to work at Auburn. Left Auburn, went back to Atlanta, coached at a high school called Hebron Christian, was the AD at Hebron. Then I started coaching girls. Then I coached at Georgia Ice with Antonio Davis, with Kayla Davis, who's on the team that was drafted to the Wings and with Time. Diamond and Shields, who now with the Chicago Sky. Dee Brown, Lexi Brown, who's with the LA Sparks, was on the team. So I'm coaching those girls with Georgia Ice.
So then I had WNBA players too?
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah. I'm coaching with Antonio Davis. We're coaching on that team. I'm an assistant coaching with him. He's going out of town every now and then, and I got to be the head coach. And then I started noticing, shoot, these girls are better than some guys. I mean, I'm coaching some elite girls. I don't even really have to do nothing. They like on cruise control. And then I just coached in high school with this team. I'm at Hebron Christian. Then I leave Hebron Christian to Cula. And then guess what happened? I'm with the Skills Academy with Nike. I'm in Washington, D.C. A guy comes in from Montreal Christian School and says, they're looking for a job. Nike calls me down in the lobby. And next thing, a few interviews, I'm at Montrose in Maryland. I get the job at Montrose Christian School. My first year, I have three pros on the team. Alonzo Terrier, Pat McCall, and Jarrell Brantley. That first year was phenomenal. Second year, in 2 years, I was 50-9. School closes, go to Washington, D.C., coach at Friendship Collegiate. First year at Friendship Collegiate, we're in the state championship game. First year, right off the bat. Leave there, now I'm in California. That's your 2 minute journey.
Sheesh.
What was
that? So you got more than five pros. You always talk about you got five pros.
Yeah, a little
you got
bit
like
more.
Eight.
Yeah.
So those girls are pros too. And true. You probably got some overseas people that we don't need to talk about. That's just the league pros.
Yeah, that's true.
At that. What is so brilliant about your coaching that wherever you go, you win?
I don't think I talk about winning. I talk about playing the right way. I learned this a long time ago. It's not the winning, it's the principles of culture. You know, there's a difference between a program and a team. You know, the thing is, you can get a bunch of kids and win and say you won. And they won 1 year out of the 20 years you were there and they had one good season. That's players. You can recruit great players and win. A program is a team that's up there all the time.
Yeah.
You know, there's some schools here that's in this area that have done an outstanding job of having great programs. So there's a separation between the two. And I think the thing for me is I try to build a program. And the thing about it is winning is a mindset. And you have to teach kids because they don't know how to win. And they also don't know what greatness look like. So you got to teach it to them. And you got to give them great principles. And you build that by the way you move, walk, and talk. Like the way our kids have to walk on campus is they got to walk like winners. They got to go to class like winners. That's where it starts at. It doesn't start. You know, that game is won before they get off the bus. That mindset is won. Think about this, though. You got people in the Army. No one goes to battle thinking they're going to lose. No one goes to war thinking they're going to lose. So it's a mindset. It's a mindset being ready to compete in battle. And the other thing is the fact that learning how to compete at every level in everything you do, that's important. Because they don't know how to compete. These kids think they do. Right. So I try to make every drill a competitive drill. I try to do some things that help separate me on the court by building something that's real special with our guys. You know, so we do some things that are real, you know, crazy. We do some things that don't make sense to people. You know, like my boot camp or the fact that one day a week they got to eat lunch together. Or, you know, if anybody's late, they got a mile run. Like, we're trying to build a culture of what greatness looks like. We're trying to build some things that's special. Special is walking into the class, sitting in the front, not in the back. So when kids are at West Ranch, you know, I said, you came from middle school to this program. You're not here to conform, you're here to transform. You're not here to conform what everybody's doing. You're here to transform school. Mm-hmm. So what are they going to say to you when you walk out the door? What's the one thing they're going to say outside of basketball they're going to say about you? You're a great person, you open doors, it can't be basketball. Because if they talk about you just playing basketball, I did a terrible job. I told my son the same thing at Virginia. If you go across that stage to Virginia and all they know you is a basketball player, you did a terrible job. There's 100 people that do that, but what's different? You know, so that's the difference, you know.
Yeah.
So I think that's what separates me.
You bring up your son. I know you're very proud of all your kids, man. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They all have done extraordinary things, accomplished extraordinary things through college and everything. Just talk about your journey being a father, coaching at the level you have, and then having kids who played the sport.
Well, I think it was different for me because I wanted my kids to be exceptional, and I think that it starts in the home too. And your discipline starts in the home. And that's what I try to say to most parents. You know, I personally think that basketball and baseball and all these sports open up doors for them to be able to become great men and great women in what they do in their field. And discipline starts there. And so with my kids, we used to have this thing where they have to write their goals down for Christmas. And then when the next Christmas comes, they got to check them off. And we was exceptional doing it. And so at 13, I didn't say anything to my kids. I said, at 13, you tell me if you want to play or not. Because if you want to play whatever sport it is, it don't have to be basketball because I'm in it, because I'm not trying to have you live my dreams. Mm-hmm. And two decided basketball, one decided football, and the journey was exceptional. My oldest played football, did a great job. He was in one of the best places in football in Georgia. It was Parkview High School. They won state 2 years in a row. So we want to put them in the best environments where they can be able to learn from the best coaches and so forth. And so he did exceptionally well and graduated. And then Justice came. Justice's journey was a little different because he had epilepsy. And I was at Auburn. And at Auburn, I remember him being in a hospital for like a week. He would also have these seizures and we didn't know what it was. And you know, the Auburn hospital used to say, well, he's just having induced asthma. And two, it happened in church, and this lady was a doctor in Columbus. He's having this attack, and she's like, take him to the hospital while I'm at. And then we're driving with her, and I remember being in the back seat with him, and I'm just like, God, I got to watch this, because he used to think he wasn't breathing, but he was. So yeah. His brain, and he's getting this seizure. And so when he gets there, they induce a coma, and he's in there for about maybe 4 or 5 days. And then at that time, my wife doesn't want to leave. She's like, I'm staying with him the whole time. By day number two, she's like, nah, I understand, that's unfair to you. Like, we're gonna swap, you be with the. And I remember being with Justice and he woke up and Joyce Myers was on, and she was talking about where man puts a period, God puts a semicolon. Hmm. And I learned that. And so what was amazing is doctors came in and they told him like, you're never gonna drive. You're never going to play any sports. You know, you have epilepsy. You're not going to do any of these things.
How old is he at this point?
He is a middle schooler in seventh grade. I would say 13, gotcha. Maybe 14, maybe. I can't remember exactly age. And he's ready to break down and cry. And I said, Justin, well, God just said to you, why can't you be the first? You know, and he goes through all this. He changes his diet. He becomes very disciplined in how he eats and everything else. And he ended up playing. He ended up playing high school. Through all these doctors, we found a way for a doctor to say, yes, he can play. And he plays, and he's having an exceptional career, and I get the Montrose Christian job. And it's his senior year. And I say, well, he's at one of the best places in Georgia, at Buford High School. And I'm like, son, if you want to stay at Buford, you can. But I'm taking his job here. So after your senior year, you can come up, and we can work out before you decide to go to school. And he says, okay. And about a month later, he's like, Dad, I want to play for you. And he comes up.
That's why Coach Carter's his movie.
There you go. There it is.
I love it. All
right. It is. Coach Carter's my movie. So he said, Dad, I want to play for you. And he has the most exceptional year. And we were really good. We come to Vegas, beat Finley Prep, they're number one in the country with Vaughn and Kelly Oubre and all those kids. And, you know, Alonzo Terrier's on the team. Pat McCall's on the team. Justice goes to Virginia. Pat goes to UNLV. Jarrell Brantley goes to College of Charleston. Ray Doby goes to South Carolina. And Trey decides to go to Finley. We beat Finley, but he goes to Finley. He leaves me and go to Finley, but our school's about to close anyway. So he
and
goes
Finley
to Finley.
Ends up closing too. But
yeah, right, exactly. And he goes to Arizona. But to say, he going here, he wanted to do something that was special, and he got to play with guys where they have a friendship to this day. Not forget the winning, but they had a friendship. And then we win a national championship up in Erie, Pennsylvania. And we win that year. And it was my first year there, and we went. It was an amazing year, and we had a great time. And he goes to Virginia, and Virginia helps him with the epilepsy, and then he becomes a spokesman for him, and then does a great year. And he graduated in 3 years at Virginia, and then go get his master in Miami and won. So, you know, and part of it is goals. And so when Justice gets the job in Milwaukee Bucks, I go over and I go stay with him, and I open up the shades, and on his window he has all his goals. And I'm just like, wow, you know? And then my daughter was like that too. My daughter graduated 16. Jaden played at Syracuse, my other younger son. He's out here too. And They've done an exceptional job on staying the course, but they also understand the idea of
physio. Your daughter's med school graduate. Let's say that. You know what I'm saying?
My daughter graduated high school at 16 and then ended up graduating at undergraduate, and she went to Georgetown Medical. She just graduated from there. So, just setting goals for my kids and being able to understand what those goals mean. But it's the same thing I try to do for these players as well.
So you said set goals for them.
Well, I didn't set for them, but them setting goals, but holding them accountable to the goals that they set.
No, I like that. I wanted to make sure that was clear, because I think that's important that the kids have a say-so in their goals, especially with parents today. There's a lot of them who set goals for their kids when their kids don't even want to play the sport.
Yeah, that's a big thing.
Or do a thing, you know? And so how related is parenting to coaching? Because you did a great job coaching your kids to meet their goals and be disciplined and all that. And I'm sure, like every parent, right, we do some things really, really good, and we probably made a lot of mistakes at the same time. But what parts of coaching did you, bridge over to parenting, or the opposite?
Well, I had to, because if I wanted to be able to be something special, I had to understand where they came from in the background. And what's happening now, there's a difference in culture, so it's a switch. You used to get inner city kids where you never saw their parents. So you can go out there and you coach them hard, because they never were at the game. They was either had two jobs, couldn't make it. So those inner city places had great play, they had great programs. Like, you go to Englewood High, you go in New York City, some of the places, you go into Chicago, you're in those cities where, the parents are not around, and you can go up there and you can, hey, this is what you're gonna do, and those coaches become father figures. It switched, because kids are not playing in the city like that anymore.
Yeah.
So much other things, and part of it is PlayStation and all those other things they have, and social media. So they're doing other things. These dudes want to do TikTok, instead of playing. But what happened is these kids who are in the suburbs, it switched because of now development. They can pay for skill development now. So now they're starting to go ahead and master their craft. But what the parent has to understand is that you're only raising one or two kind of kids. So when I was at Auburn, I knew, there's two kids I'm trying to recruit. Now, are you hungry? Or you just want something to eat? Now, a hungry kid, he gonna make a mayonnaise sandwich. He gonna find a place to play. He gonna call all around to get in the gym. He gonna figure it out. But a kid who wants something to eat, he got a cabinet full of food. He just sitting at home waiting for somebody to cook it. He ain't trying to cook it. So does he practice? Yeah, because you ask him to. Does he work out? Yeah, because come on, let's work out. But he ain't hungry. And so when you get to the Division I level, we got to get guys who are hungry. We don't need guys who just want something to eat. But for a parent has to raise, you're raising one or two kids. You're either raising a wolf or a sheep. Now, you raise a sheep, you're gonna have to protect them all the time. And that's what's happening to parents. They wanna protect their kids all the time, because that's a sheep. You always gotta protect the sheep. You can't never leave a sheep alone. That's what it is. But a wolf will find other wolves to find some way to eat. And they have to realize that. Because struggle builds character. They're trying to take away the struggle, and there's no character being built on them. So what I try to do with our kids is, when I got the job at West Ranch, the first thing I told parents, I'm not gonna communicate to you. I'm gonna make sure that these kids communicate to me. Because whether they play basketball or not, they're gonna come inside of a classroom or inside of a, and they're gonna have to be able to advocate for themselves.
Yeah.
So let's teach them how to advocate now. They can talk to me about anything. They can even talk to me about playing time, I'm fine, but not you. And so a lot of parents will, I need to drop them off. I need to know what time. And so I gave them the example. If they're working at Burger King, the manager ain't calling you to tell you that they got their shift starts. You feel what I'm saying? The manager ain't sitting there like, Todd didn't make it today. Can you make sure you pick him up and drop? Nobody's. They're having that conversation with your son or your daughter. So again, you're teaching them how to talk. And the problem, that the reason why these kids don't talk anymore, is because cell phones.
Yeah.
When a kid want to break up with a girl, it's all over social media. Like, you wouldn't break up with somebody, they texting. They're not going to say, look, this is not working out.
I'm blaming on Drake.
Well,
it could be a lot of breakup songs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Drake doing that thing. So, so there it is. So that's my concept on parenting. Like, are you raising a wolf or are you raising a sheep? Mm. Remember that. Because my thing with my telling, when I was in the house when we were married, I said, hey, if he can't take my hard discipline of me talking to him and I love him, then how is he going to take somebody being hard in the world that don't love him? You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because the next person is going to talk to him even worse than I am, but they don't even care about him. So he needs to be able to see that and handle it. So he has to see things that he may not see now, but he has to see later. How do we train him for that? So when I'm coaching, I'm thinking about what tools I'm going to give him in a tool belt when they go to school that they can have right there on them. you know, Coach Todd said, I need to do this. Coach Todd said, eat the fish and spit out the bone. Okay, I didn't like what they said to me, so I'm going to eat that and I'm going to spit the other part out. Because no kid sits there and eat the bone. You know, you get wings, you don't eat the bone. You get fish, you don't eat the bone, but you eat the good part. Same thing in a conversation.
Yeah.
You feel me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Todd,
I don't even know.
Just say, yep. You know what I'm saying?
There's a lot of things that you do in coaching, man, that I just respect so much, man, from your handbook to your structure of practice to your communication and how you put a lot of responsibility and accountability on the kids, like you're talking about. Those things that really build a program and a culture. What can I do as a brand new coach to, you know, it's like you got that over the years, right? Being right. A USA basketball, ABCD, can be around all these great coaches. As a new coach stepping into my first role as a head coach, how do I find those resources? How do I get to where you're at faster than you did so I can build a career based on, you know, your success, like to mirror your success?
I would say the first thing you have to do is get a mentor. Somebody, because somebody's already done it before you have. So find who can mentor you, because that's going to be the first avenue. Mentorship is the biggest thing you need. The second thing is you got to ask why you're doing it. Because passion equals purpose. There's a lot of coaches that coach this and coach kids that don't love kids. You know, think about it. Like they they don't understand what their words and what they do with these kids. Either do one or two things. They'll love the game or they'll never pick up that ball again.
Yeah.
Because that's the kind of effect you can have on kids. And so, I was blessed to have a couple of different experiences. But, you know, I love my dudes. My dudes mean a lot to me. My dudes mean more to me than just winning. So when I'm out there, you have to understand why you're doing it. That's another thing. Like, you know, why am I out here?
Yeah.
Because it takes a lot of time to be out there, away from your family, a lot of things you do. Like, you got kids, you know what it is to balance that. And I was unbalanced. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I was balanced. I was unbalanced with my marriage and everything else. But the thing about me is I love being around them, and I love giving them the stuff that they need that they will have for life. What kind of chef would you be? A guy that cooks food and don't want to see people eat it. You know what I'm saying? You want to cook, you want people to love the food you make. And so when I'm teaching, I love people that want to get the things that I want to give them. And that's why my passion equal purpose. It's my sanctuary on the court. I'm not just coaching them. I'm giving them tools. Because one thing I'm saying on that court resonates and goes into all different avenues in life. Yeah. It ain't just basketball. Learning how to compete. Learning what good to great is. You know, they become great in what they do because they learn these principles now. So as a new coach, I want to give them stuff that they don't know. And how do you do that? By getting and learning. My issue is that there's not a lot of coaches that relearn themselves. There's not a lot of coaches that go to the NABC, part of basketball conventions, going to clinics. Look at our clinics. Yeah. California is one of the biggest states. Can you imagine if we took all the Valley coaches and had a big session with X and O's and we were on the board just talking about, we do this. We don't want to do that. We don't want to share ideas. I can give you all the things I do. I'm not afraid that you take my stuff because you ain't me. You ain't me. You could write down everything I say. You ain't me though.
Right.
You know, you may not get up extra to go to practice. You may not be at practice 45 minutes early just to make sure the kids are in study hall and we're going to talk. You may not have a session where you're doing film. You may not even film your practices. So you can write it all down, but if you don't apply, it don't mean anything. Yeah. So again, also, I'm not afraid from you learning from me because I learn from others too. So I'm not afraid of sharing ideas because I'm always going to grow. That's number three. When you're coaching, you have to continue to grow and master your craft, and that goes back to learning. If you're not master, you're doing one or two things in life. You're never the same. You're either getting better or getting worse.
Right.
Yeah. It's in the Bible. Ain't no such thing as lukewarm. You ain't lukewarm. You're either hot or cold, my dude. You just don't know it yet. You in there tripping. And you're wondering why this tank is kind of freezing. Because you cold. Or you hot burning up because you ain't doing the things you need to do. So you have to figure out what that is for you. And my thing is, I love my dudes. I help them grow and to become the person that they need to be. Because when I'm looking at a player, I don't see them for what they are. I see them what they're going to be.
Yes.
So I can take a guy and say, you know what? I bet he can. Here, everybody wants to get the finished product. Man. Let me just get this kid and he gonna play for me because he good. And then here's the practice. He don't know how to score a layup. Well, you ain't taught them. Or this one, like, you know what? We done did this drill 6 times. They don't know how to do left hand. That's why they with you. If they was perfect, why would you be there? Like, they wouldn't need you. And so I'm about development.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I hang my hats on 2 things for new coaches. One, what do you do that separates you two? And I know when it comes to West Ranch, we do 2 things now. Excuse me. One, we're going to develop no matter where you are. And 2, we're going to fight and scramble. I'll make 100 calls to make sure they get to school because that's going to be my legacy. That's it.
Yeah. Talk about that because I've seen you do it where you literally called 100 schools for certain kids. How do I want to say this? Do you pick a level for that kid or do you just call schools just to see who will grab or, you know, what is the tact to doing that?
I think there's a process in it all. And so for me, like the first process at my school was inviting them. I went online and found all the elite camps that they had and I sent them all there. So I say, hey, seniors, here's all the elite camps. Sign up. Juniors, if you want to go, you can. But seniors, you need to do it. Now, my seniors have to send 5 letters a week out to schools. Now, some of them want to be Division I, Division II. I'm good. People are like, nah, they shouldn't do that. Nah, you good. Because you better give me Division I effort. Now I'm going to hold you accountable in practice. Because today you look like you need to go to DeVry. Because you know what I'm saying? DeVry got it starting to have a program too, so you might look at that. But the question is, I don't want to kill them with their dreams. And then they also have to have a reality test to check on it. So it's your dream schools and the reality schools. And so we'll do both lines. But there's no sense of me working them hard and I'm not going to work hard for them too.
Yeah.
So we're working together. Because rules without relationship equal rebellion. If I'm not in a relationship with a young man and I have all these rules, he's going to rebel against me. But if we're in this together and I'm making calls and I'm sending out letters and we're doing it together, they're in tune. They know that we're engaged. We're, you know. And sometimes I can go off on a kid hard in practice and at the end he's like, coach, I got you. Because he knows that we're doing this together.
Yeah.
But when you over there just doing it and there is no end goal, they're looking at you. Listen, you want to know what they think about you? Locker room when you ain't in there. When they in there talking, they're all talking about you. They're talking about you. Whether it's good or bad, they're in that locker room talking. That's what you know. But their actions will speak volumes because when your door's open, if they don't hang out with you, they don't like being with you.
Mm.
You see what I'm saying? So when my door's open and they want to just hang out and they're sitting at the desk, it says, open door, they feel comfortable.
Yeah.
But when practice starts and they only get there and they leave, they don't want to be with you.
No relationship.
No relationship. That's it.
Hey, coaches, check yourself.
just do this off
if they ain't hanging out with you, if they rebelling,
nah, here you go,
you need
man.
To check your relationships. No, this is me. This isn't Coach Brian saying. This is Todd saying this. invest into these kids, man, and see them for the potential. I say it a lot on the show, man, and every time it's brought up because it's so dear to my heart that it happened to me. That's what happened. My college coach didn't see the potential in me.
Dude.
And I got really good after leaving him. And it was because of that mindset that he had that I was good for playing defense and setting screens. And so that also created a chip.
Todd, you know what the best test is when you want to talk about impact of good and great, good and bad? Take a kid in core. Tie up, put a blindfold on him, right? And tell him to turn backwards to the basket and have all the kids right there and go to the kids. Look, no matter where he makes it or not, I want you to yell like, great shot, great shot. And just tell him to throw the ball behind his head. And when he takes off and everybody's cheering, you made it, look what that kid looks like. Because them cheering on, he'll never know he didn't make it. He's going to be so encouraged, like, oh, man, because that's the difference between positive and negative. Now, do the same thing and then tell him, even if he made it, like, boo, you suck, you terrible. That's the impact we have on kids. The impact is when you cheer them on, they're more willing and motivated to do more. And that's the issue we have. And so, for me, I learn, like, my preparation is for them to get onto Division I. Because being a former Division I coach, what happens is when a kid comes from a great school, Division I, when he transitions, when the semester ends in the fall going into the next semester in January, he goes from a freshman to a sophomore because he's already known. They don't have to teach him that. Now he knows the plays. He's come from a great place, a great program. He knows academics. But when a kid is from a poor or bad program and the semester changes, he's still a freshman.
Hmm.
He still has to learn. He won't be a sophomore until a whole year.
So what do you do as a high school coach to prepare them to do that?
I'm setting up at my school a place where they can transition faster. Do we have an academic guy? Yeah. Do we have strength and conditioning? Yes. I want to put things in place so that the transition, because the real lesson of your player is like, think about the kids who played for Core and come back and say, hey man, what were you missing? That's how I learn. Not because I won a state championship and they can walk around with a medal on them, but hey, you're at USC. The transition from my school to USC, what do you think we were missing? He said, Coach, you know, I think strength and conditioning could be better. Oh, you know what, Coach? If we had an academic, that's where you learn where your holes are. Yeah. You learn when the kids leave and they come back and go, Coach, I was well prepared. It's nothing like a math teacher and a kid walks in the door and says, Mr. So-and-so, man, I learned so much from you, math, and I got to school and I was ready.
Mr. Spatz.
Yeah.
Eighth grade.
See, look at that. You know?
That he literally taught me everything I need to know about math. I didn't need literally the rest of my math career.
See started. What happens? And you remember that.
Until statistics in college.
Well, there you go.
That was a tough class.
Yeah. You know?
But all the high school.
Yeah. You know. And I make it a duty. There's a kid at Florida State now, AJ. I talk to him all the time. Hey, man, what's missing? What do you think is a high school coach that I can add to make it easier for him? And I ask him that. He's that day now. I'm like, what can I do to get better? Because those conversations allows me to become a better coach. Because now I get to see the holes in myself. And that's where you really grow at. That's the
truth. You're okay. It's not a pride hit for you to know what you need to get better at.
No.
Ever. You can.
That's it. That's where growth is at, my dude. You can't grow if you don't do that.
Man. We're going to move to the next segment. These are golden bars, y'all.
Man, he ain't up to chain, man.
Listen, and he's an open book, man. When y'all see him around, man, come get some of this knowledge and wisdom. He's new to the West Coast.
Yeah.
And he's finding his way around. So, he coached Paul George's 17s last year. Mm-hmm. And coach at West Ranch now, and I'm sure he'll find his way back into the AAU scene soon. And this is me giving him a chance to let people know what he's about out here in California.
Appreciate it.
Because we have our guards up out here for good reason, because we want to protect these kids. Mm-hmm. But man, Brian's a good dude, and he means well for these kids. I don't think anybody moves across the country just to coach for nothing. So.
Yeah.
No, appreciate you, man, and wisdom and knowledge you're kicking to the peeps.
Nah, so I appreciate this. Thanks for the opportunity, though.
Yeah, our next segment is my Rushmore, your top four New York point guards of all time.
New York point guards of all time. Number one, Tiny Archibald. Led in three different categories in the Boston Celtics. That's number one.
Mm.
You know? Number two's got to be Kenny Anderson, what he's done in New York City, and New York City's best player. You know, Kenny was phenomenal. Three,
don't do it.
Woo! It's got to be Kenny Smith, the Jet. The Jet has got to be up there. The Jet has done some phenomenal things. The Jet is exceptional because he's the only one I know. He was our rivalry at Archbishop Stefanik, and the Jet did everything in his senior year. He didn't have scholarship to a senior. He's done a phenomenal job. He is an outstanding. And also, when you look at it, his IQ and his basketball knowledge is exceptional. Yeah, he'll be a great coach if they allow him in the NBA. I got a tie between four. You know, it's got between Rod Strickland and Mark Jackson. I'm a Rod lover, though. I think Rod is one of the best finishers. When you see Kyrie Irving, that's Rod Strickland. You know, I don't think Rod Strickland ever got his just due. Mark is exceptional too, but that's my Rushmore. But there's a tie in four. Gotcha. Tie in four. There you go.
All right. So for me, it's a little bit different. I'm a little younger. Right. So I'm going to go, Okay. Right. So I do agree. Kenny Anderson. Mm-hmm. We have to. Kenny Smith. Mm-hmm. We have to. Mark Jackson's actually my third.
I knew he was
I play with Mark too in some adult leagues and stuff, and just know him as a person, man. And his ability to, he taught me how to pass. Like, I was a good passer. He taught me how to pass and to see things that nobody sees.
That's
angles
true.
And how to,
yes.
Even if your teammate doesn't see the pass coming, how to get the, man, he taught me some stuff, man, and just
Marcus
playing with him. So, awesome dude, awesome man of God. And my fourth is actually Sebastian Telfair, man.
Oh, yo, sad.
Look, okay. Man, in high school?
Yeah, he was dead.
I don't
he
think was there dead. Was anyone
you're right.
I saw him come here and drop 30 and 15 assists. Like, it was nothing against, was it Was it Mater Dei? I believe it was Mater Dei at the Pango's joint, man.
Woo! Mater Dei.
I was like, yeah, no, Sebastian Telfair, man, was that dude.
But see, that's the thing. So, New York has so many good from, you know, Kenny Hutch, man, and Sebastian, and you also got to talk about Stephen Marbury.
I mean, we forgot about Mr. Vaseline here, yeah, Stephon Marbury. Yeah,
so there's so many, man. We have so many great guards.
Yeah, Stephon Marbury's out there too.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, New York got some, you know, where y'all at lately though?
NYPG, man. We wanted to give some other states some turns, and we've been running it for so long. We're into this, you know, giving volunteer. We're running the community service, and so this is a great opportunity for y'all to have great point guards at other states now. We allowed you all to do it now. We'll be back in maybe a couple
years.
I've
never heard this excuse in my life. This is amazing. He said they community service driven.
Yeah, this is a community service. Yeah, and New York. We was dominating so long. We like, you know what? Let's let some of these other states get something, man. We got to give something to them, man.
No, absolutely. Our next segment is the Fix the Net. A misconception about Brian Bartley that you want to make clear. And after you say it, you got to fix the net.
My misconception about me would be I'm not emotional and passionate. I think some people look at my personal view of how I am. I'm big on making sure people understand that I want to be part of a circle that's always, that's up there. So for example, if I'm not selected for something, I got an issue. If you have the best camp and I'm not a coach, I got an issue. You know, I got a little Mamba mentality in me a little bit. Like, you know, if it's something going on that's great, I want to be part of. But people think it's emotional, but it's just because I'm passionate. You know, I'm extremely passionate about what I want to do and how I want to do. I mean, and how I want to have an effect on kids. So I say fix the net about me. Brian Bartley's not emotional, man. He's passionate.
Passionate. He's left-handed.
Yeah. No, right.
Oh, okay. You can make left-handed layups.
That's right. Sure. Okay. And that's good. Left and shooting the ball left-handed. So,
and this is the part of the show where we flip the script. Two questions for me. Can be about anything in the world.
Hell, question number one: how do you separate yourself?
Ooh, how do I separate myself?
How do you separate yourself from other people that's doing this, trying to do the same thing or want to do the same thing?
So I'm gonna say I don't separate myself. I believe God separates me.
Ooh. Okay.
And
wow.
I'm saying that because of my calling in my life. He's always told me that I'm going to be an encourager to people who encourage the masses. Mm-hmm. And that's my whole goal, job, duty in life is to help build people up that are going to impact other people. And so I believe that's number one, is like people see this thing in me and they don't know. A lot of people who know Jesus see it and they understand it, but the people who don't are like, man, there's something about you, or they're attracted to what I'm doing with core or just being around me. It's it's the Jesus that lives in me.
Yeah.
And that's it. And so I believe that's what separates me.
Ooh, that's
on
sweet.
Level. I honestly don't know anything else that I do differently than other people besides that. Has called me, and that's my purpose. So
that's big. I like that. I remember being at a camp at FCA, and they said to me, as a Christian, the only God these kids may know is you, on how you act and what you do. And so I knew that. So that's big. That's huge, man. I like that. Yeah. All right. Question number two. When you think about yourself and everything that you accomplished and everything, what is the one thing you felt that you've done that you are extremely excited about in your life that you've, like, what are the biggest moments in your life for you that you felt like you've had or done? Or major accomplishment that you felt like you've done?
Man, being married for 11 years and being faithful and focused on my wife and my family.
That's awesome.
I'm very, very proud of that, for the world that we live in today, the industry we're in with basketball. And, you know, I've just been around a lot of people with broken marriages and people, unfaithful people.
That's true.
And, man, I'm so blessed to have my wife and to have the kids I have, and to, I'm not gonna cry, Karina, don't look at me. And
that's awesome.
And to just keep that the main focus. Like, I've literally turned money, jobs, opportunities down to make sure that my focus is on my marriage and my wife. That's what I'm most proud of. That's success to me, is showing people that you can do this and be a stand-up husband, stand-up father, stand-up dude.
That's good. I'm just gonna tell you, man, that was huge for me to hear. I tell you why, because of what I went through, and you know what I've been through, is that one, your first ministry is always home. And always make sure that when you're taking withdrawals from your wife, make sure you make deposits. Don't ever withdraw more than you have in deposit. That's all I have, man.
I appreciate that, man.
My man.
You got one more question for me? I feel another question.
I kind of have another question, but I didn't want to say it to
Go
you.
Go ahead.
Why do you feel like people are so magnetic to you on who you are? Like, what do you think it is that allows people to be drawn to you so much?
I mean, besides the God piece, besides something God. Else?
Well, I mean, I think it's God, but I know it's God for a fact.
I had a really close friend tell me this. It's because they feel, I give them confidence and I give them guidance to, like, I'm a, all right, guys, Karina is the one who told me this. Karina back there laughing. She's like, really good friends. Karina told me this.
All right, okay.
And, the question was, like, if I sell something that's not a product, what am I selling? She was like, guidance and confidence. And it really resonated. I, like, prayed about it, and I took a step back. And I'm like, what is that? And it's because you can tell me right now that you want to go and be the GM of the Lakers, and I fully believe that you could become the GM. All right, this is how we're going to do that. All right, I'm going to need you to get into this space. What we're going to do is talk to this Lakers official, and we're going to get you in the door, and this is the track. I really feel like you could do that. I don't doubt it. I don't know. I just have this unbelievable faith in other people to reach their goals. If they get out their own way, they follow the blueprint, and they just have faith. Like, God can do it. Because if that's the desire in your heart, then that's a desire God has for you. And it's up to us to continue to get closer to God in order to reach that goal, though. Those things that He put in our heart at a young age, and those desires, they're not there for no reason. Right. But we have to be ready and prepared and grow into those places, or we'll get stuck in the wilderness for 40 years. Instead of the journey that was supposed to take 3 weeks, we get stuck for 40 years because we're not learning what God wants to teach us. And so...
That's good. That's really good.
Yeah.
You know, I got a lot from that.
I think that's it. It's like, I think everybody believes in themselves when they're in my space, because you ain't got no choice.
So people really see the God in you as well, and you're authentic. Like, you're very authentic in who you are as a person. Yeah. But on top of it, your walk with God allows them to understand that it can happen. Like, you know, these things are possible because God can do the possible.
Yeah.
So what may be impossible to man is possible to you, you know, with God. That's really good. I'm a believer of that. That's why I think I'm gonna be exceptionally well. So. Sure.
Welcome to Karina's segment. I have a question for both of you guys. We probably have a third mic. So one thing you guys both have in common that you guys talked about throughout this podcast is seeing the potential in people. Players seeing and helping and willing to give, call the 100 schools, seeing the potential, figuring out a plan to get them there. So how do you manage not helping 100 people and wearing yourself out? Because, like, how can you pour out to so many people at once?
I think that's God too, though. I think much is given, much required. I think God sets the tone and sets the stage of who you want. So, for example, when I'm coaching, I took the job, I prayed and asked God to send the kids He wanted me to have. Mm-hmm. I said, God, send me the kids You want to have on this team. I think when you're allowing God to be in it, you're not overwhelmed by it. But when it becomes a flesh people thing, you're overwhelmed because now it's to the world, you're catering to the world. If you cater to God, God will be able to separate those for you. You know, God loves you. He's not gonna give you more than what you can handle. He's gonna give you exactly the amount that He can handle. I always tell kids, God gives you the number of whatever those bricks in your backpack that you're carrying, He's giving you and equipped you for the numbers of those bricks in your backpack. He's allowed you to be able to carry that. He won't give you one brick more than what He's put in that backpack for you. You have to look at it from that point.
This is something I actually struggle with, just have being responsible for so many kids, parents, and their families. And so what I learned is that my cup has to overflow. And that's from a spiritual perspective, emotional, and physical. And so being able to serve and constantly be giving out, I have to fill myself first. And something that I knew, and it's just rediscovered, because I did all summer, I was not working out. I got fat. I was eating, was traveling a lot. I was all over the place. But I finally got down to school, started back up, got back into my workout routine. And I told my wife, it is like, I've cooked dinner the last 2 days. I made banana bread out of nowhere the other night. Yeah, I burnt it a little bit, but it's cool. But like, I have this energy now because that morning time and workout time, that devotion, I use that as devotion time. I'm worshiping, praying while I'm working out all at the same time. It's so important to me getting my day started. I don't like it. I don't want to do it, but it's so, it fills my cup. It makes my cup overflow with spending time with God and physically feeling like I'm in shape and I'm doing something. And so that overflow now, I don't feel drained when I go to people and have to, you know, dish out so much. And so make sure you are giving out of your abundance, not out of you, yeah, not being like, if you're perfectly full, you can't go and I can't pour out. Right. We're both losing now, because you got a little bit and I got a little bit. Right. I have to be overflowing with whatever it
That's
is true. That I'm giving out.
And that's so good. That's really good.
Yeah. I think a lot of people, oh, I want to sacrifice and I want to give, but we hit a point of not loving it or not liking it because we have given all that we have and we're leaving our tank empty as well.
That's good. I like that. I'm gonna learn from that one. My cup overfloweth.
You guys are both in the more of a, like, personal development. I'll say that versus player development. Because, I mean, I've just been around you. And I'm like, oh, my God. Like, that's incredible. You've had a few of the make your mess into a message, make your test into a testimony. You have these little, not sayings, but, like, inspirational, like, I needed that. Or that applies to this. And I'm with Todd 24/7. So I hear he has a bunch of them. How do you guys... What do you guys listen to, or how do you guys actually, like, get these nuggets? Like, who has inspired you guys, or what do you guys do to kind of, because what you listen to, what you consume fills your mind. Obviously, you guys are consuming good quality things, because what you guys are saying, I can hear it. And I think a lot of not only players or, like, students, but even parents, like, because if they're telling their kids what to do, it's like, you have to consume good things to be able to tell your son, like, hey, we can overcome this because A, B, or C, and that healthy words versus yelling. So what's some stuff that you guys consume that you guys could suggest to...
I'm gonna give you a my Rushmore to be on I'll give you my Rushmore. So first one's the Bible, just like all wisdom and all these sayings and everything that anybody comes up with is rooted in the Bible. Yeah. You can say it, people flip it and try to turn it their own way. No, it's in the Word of God. And so the Bible. And so, yes, and one, and then two, Earl Nightingale. He's probably one of the old school, one of the first, like, motivators. He had his own radio station just talking about self-development. He's, man, just, I don't know what it is about a monotone, strong voiced white man, but I don't know. I listen to it. So, but Earl Nightingale. And third, I'm going to have to go, more recently, Inky Johnson.
Motivational speaker, my guy.
Inky is just powerful. He has all the, you know, the isms, and he puts them together in a way that you can understand. And then lastly, it's going to be a weird one, but it's I think whenever I need motivation, I go to Will Smith's autobiography, and there are so many nuggets in his journey.
Wow.
And you wouldn't know how wise that man is and the things that he's been through and what you can learn from somebody else's life. You know, I'm a fan of him growing up. And so to be able to hear his growth throughout his years and the things that he shares in his book, get his audio book. It's dope. It literally is, there's parts of that book I listen to at least once a week to stay encouraged and stay on my journey.
Now you're going to let me buy Will Smith. I got to go to store and buy Will Smith.
No, well, you need the audiobook, because he narrates the audiobook and he does all his little impersonations and all that. I got you.
All right, let me do that. You know, for me, it's the Bible, number one, and number two is just I read a lot.
Yeah.
I'm a big avid reader, and I learned that being around Buzz Williams when I brought a recruit up. And Buzz asked the kid, you know, why is it so important to read? You know, how long does it take an author to write a book? And your kid didn't know, and he said 3 years. So every time you read, you become 3 to 4 years wiser. Like every time I get a new job, I read Hand Me Another Brick, and it's about Nehemiah building this wall. And Nehemiah he's a cupbearer for the king, and he's asking for permission to build it, and he's asking for permission to go. And the reason why that's important, that when you're building something like new, it's a great book to read. But he talks about going, that he asks the king for three things: permission, supplies, and protection. And when he gets to building and he starts to build a wall back, he realized his adversaries against him. And every day these guys are coming up talking about, come down and let's talk. But he's starting to realize through prayer, they're holding him up for building it on time. So he stops coming down the ladder. Now they're attacking the workers, and he has to pray about the workers. But it's good. It's great when you're building a staff and some new things, because there's some concepts in Nehemiah building it as you're building a program or you're building something that's new. Because as you start to find out, you're going to be attacked in different areas and where you're going to be attacked. So the Bible is one, and reading, I even try to encourage our players to read, because it helps them grow. It helps them in the other areas, and those are two things for me. That's it.
Another one is John Maxwell. I read 36 John Maxwell books, so I have to give credit to John Maxwell just reading his books during COVID, and about leadership, and it's a lot of work myself.
That's about it.
She has more, but we're done. All right, so that's your camera right there. 24-second shot clock. A message for the people and where people can find you on social media or whatever you got.
Brian Bartley is social media. My Instagram is, my Twitter's at Coach Bartley, at Coach B Bart, at Coach B Bart. I'm real simple on Instagram. Just look up Brian Bartley and look up coaching. You can find me. I'm always here if you need any help. If you ever want to reach out, just reach out to me at West Ranch High School and just contact me anyway. And I'm here always to be able to give you nuggets and make sure that you get the things you need. So that's it.
Man, appreciate you. We could have went on. This is very surface.
Yeah.
We're going to get in deeper next time. Get the people what they want. All right.
It was good, man. I appreciate
We appreciate y'all. We'll see you next time. Peace.